Chapter 4, The Bill of Rights, Why It Matters. Americans have the right to speak out on issues and make their feelings known. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, guarantees certain basic rights to all Americans. Among the most important is freedom of speech. It guarantees that people will not be punished for stating their beliefs, even if most people disagree with those beliefs. Big Ideas. Section 1. The First Amendment. The Constitution of the United States establishes and protects fundamental rights and liberties. The First Amendment protects 5 basic freedoms that are essential to the American way of life. Section 2. The Bill of Rights. The Constitution of the United States establishes and protects fundamental rights and liberties. The first 10 amendments of the Constitution describe the rights of American citizens. Section 3. Extending the Bill of Rights. A Constitution reflects the values and goals of the society that creates it. Some Americans have not always enjoyed the full rights of United States citizens. Section 4. The Civil Rights Struggle. Political, social, religious, and economic changes influence the way Americans think and act. In the 1950s and 1960s, many African Americans began an organized fight for their rights as citizens. Section 1. The First Amendment. Real-world civics. Today, it is not unusual to see a minority or a woman delivering the news on national television. This was not always the case. Former CNN correspondent Maria Hinojosa led a panel discussion among important artists of color about this issue. Even though the Bill of Rights gives Americans the right to free speech, free press, and free expression, it did not ensure these opportunities would be given to all Americans. Hinojosa's career success, and that of other minorities, represented an acceptance of multicultural voices in mainstream media, music, and the arts that is relatively recent in American history. First Amendment Freedoms. Main Idea. Soon after ratification of the Constitution, the First Amendment was added to guarantee basic freedoms essential to American democracy. Civics and You. As you learn about the First Amendment, think about how life in the United States might be different if we did not have these rights. The founders of the United States believe that protecting individual rights and providing for the safety and well-being of citizens were important purposes of government. The Constitution might not have been ratified had the Bill of Rights not been promised. Added in 1791, the 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights place strict limits on how the national government can use its power over the people. Civil liberties. The Bill of Rights protects our civil liberties, the freedoms we have to think and to act without government interference or fear of unfair treatment. These civil liberties are the cornerstone of our democracy. They ensure that each of us can develop our own beliefs, express ourselves freely, meet openly with others, and have our views on public matters heard by those who govern. The First Amendment to the Constitution protects 5 basic freedoms: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, and freedom to petition the government. Freedom of religion. Intolerance of different beliefs in their homelands forced many colonists to come to America in the first place. The First Amendment safeguards religious freedom in 2 ways. First, the amendment prohibits Congress from establishing an official religion in the United States. This is known as the Establishment Clause. In 1802, President Thomas Jefferson referred to the First Amendment's Establishment Clause as a wall of separation between church and state. This makes the United States different from countries in which a state religion is established. It also makes us different from nations that have, in the past, strongly discouraged the practice of religion at all, such as the former Soviet Union and People's Republic of China. Second, this amendment guarantees Americans the right to practice their faith as they wish. The government may not favor one religion over another or treat people differently because of their personal beliefs. Freedom of speech. In some countries, people can be jailed for criticizing the government or for expressing their ideas, even if they do so in private conversations. The First Amendment guarantees that we can say what is on our minds, in public or in private, without fear of punishment by the government. Face-to-face discussions, telephone conversations, lectures, and radio and TV broadcasts are covered by the guarantee of free speech. So are other forms of expression besides the spoken word. As interpreted by the Supreme Court, speech can mean internet communication, art, music, and even clothing. Freedom of the press. The First Amendment allows Americans to express themselves in print as well as in speech. When the Bill of Rights was written, the press referred to printed publications such as books, newspapers, and magazines. Today, the press includes many other sources of media, such as radio, television, and computer networks. Freedom of the press ensures that the American people are exposed to a wide variety of viewpoints. The government cannot practice censorship. That is, it cannot ban printed materials or films merely because they contain alarming or offensive ideas. It also cannot censor information before it is published or broadcast. The Zenger case. In 1733, publisher John Peter Zenger, in his paper The New York Weekly Journal, was arrested and imprisoned for criticizing the governor of New York. Andrew Hamilton, Zenger's lawyer, argued that only a press free to criticize the government could prevent that government from abusing its power. Zenger was acquitted. At the time, the case attracted little attention, but today it is regarded as a landmark in the development of free press in America. After the American Revolution, several states provided for the freedom of the press in their state constitutions. Later, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution provided for a free press in American society as a whole. The mass media, newspapers, magazines, television, radio, and the Internet, however, are not totally free of government regulation. Many reasonable restrictions can be placed on rights of the media. For example, no person has the right to use printed words to injure another person's character or reputation. Supreme Court rulings allowed the press to be limited when the printed materials might threaten national security. Laws also prohibit the printing and distribution of obscene materials. Freedom of assembly. The First Amendment protects our right to gather in groups for any reason, so long as the assemblies are peaceful. We have the right to attend meetings, parades, political rallies, and public celebrations. Governments may make rules about when and where such activities can be held, but they cannot ban them. The Supreme Court has decided that freedom of assembly implies or suggests freedom of association. Thus, the First Amendment also protects our right to form and join social clubs, political parties, labor unions, and other organizations. Even if we never assemble with fellow members, we have the right to belong to such groups. Freedom to petition. Finally, the First Amendment guarantees all Americans the right to petition the government. A petition is simply a formal request. Often we use the word to refer to a specific kind of document, a brief or written statement signed by hundreds or thousands of people. Even a simple letter or email written by an individual, however, could be considered a petition. The right to petition means the right to express one's ideas to the government. If you want to complain about overcrowded schools, for example, or suggest that a skating park be built in your community, you can write to your elected representatives. If enough people express similar views, government leaders may take action. Reading check, summarizing. What is meant by a petition in freedom to petition? First Amendment limits. Main idea. All constitutional rights are limited. These limitations are necessary to ensure our other rights are protected. Civics and you. The First Amendment protects free speech, but does it protect speech that damages a person's character or reputation? Read to find out what limits are placed on our First Amendment freedoms. The First Amendment guarantees Americans the right to express their thoughts and opinions. However, this is not an absolute freedom. Freedom of speech, for example, does not include the right to endanger our government or other Americans. You do not have freedom to provoke a riot. You are not free to speak or write in a way that immediately leads to criminal activities or efforts to overthrow the government by force. Citizens should use their civil liberties responsibly, which means they should not interfere with the rights of others. For example, you are free to talk with your friends in the street, but you must not block traffic. You may campaign for causes, but you may not disturb your neighbors with blaring loudspeaker broadcasts. You may criticize government officials, but you may not spread lies that harm a person's reputation. Spreading spoken lies is a crime called slander. It is called libel if lies are printed. The First Amendment was never intended to allow Americans to do whatever they please. The rights of one individual must be balanced against the rights of others and against the rights of the community. When there is a conflict, the rights of the community often come first. Otherwise, the society would break apart. Reading check, explaining. Why are your First Amendment rights limited? Issues to debate. Is the Patriot Act an infringement of privacy? A terrorist attack shocked the United States on September 11, 2001. Congress quickly responded to the Attorney General's call for changes in the law to combat terrorism. President George W. Bush signed the Patriot Act as a new tool to fight a threat like no other our nation has ever seen. Later, some members of Congress and concerned citizens said some parts of the act violated the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. Before most searches, officers must obtain a warrant from a judge showing probable cause and describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. The Patriot Act made exceptions to these requirements. Section 215 permitted the FBI to go before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court for an order to search for any tangible things connected to a terrorism suspect. Yes. In November 2003, the American Civil Liberties Union contended that the Patriot Act contains flaws that threaten your fundamental freedoms by giving the government the power to access your medical records, tax records, information about the books you buy or borrow without probable cause, and the power to break into your home and conduct secret searches without telling you for weeks, months, or indefinitely. In 2004, the ACLU filed a lawsuit to overturn a Patriot Act provision that gave the government authority to obtain customer records from Internet service providers and other businesses without a warrant. American Civil Liberties Union. No. Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah voted for the Patriot Act and defended it when Congress voted to renew most of its provisions. In 2003, he said, "The Patriot Act has not eroded any of the rights we hold dear as Americans. I would be the first to call for corrective action were that the case. Yet not one of the civil liberties groups has cited one instance of abuse of our constitutional rights. We should not undermine or limit our law enforcement and intelligence agencies' efforts by imposing requirements that go above and beyond those required by the Constitution. That would only have the effect of protecting terrorists and criminals while endangering the lives of innocent Americans. Senator Orrin Hatch. Section 2. The Bill of Rights. Real World Civics. Some dogs are pets, and some dogs perform a civic duty during a legal search. Below, police officer Tom Colbert and his canine partner Reggie check student lockers in a Cheektowaga, New York high school for contraband. Most dogs have a sense of smell that is 1,000 times more sensitive than a human's. With proper training, sniffer dogs can detect explosives, weapons, and illegal drugs. The Supreme Court holds that an individual's right to privacy does not extend to illegal activities and has ruled that canine searches are legal. Protecting the rights of the accused. Main idea. In addition to the important civil liberties protected by the First Amendment, the other 9 amendments in the Bill of Rights guarantee the right to fair legal treatment as well as other freedoms. Civics and you. How well do you know what constitutional protections you enjoy as a United States citizen? Read about your rights under the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment freedoms are among our most important civil liberties. Equally precious, however, is the right to fair legal treatment. This is the subject of several amendments in the Bill of Rights. Suppose someone accuses you of committing a crime. In some countries, government agents might ransack your home, drag you off to jail, beat you, and hold a trial without even letting you respond to the charges. In the United States, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th Amendments help prevent such a scenario from occurring. The 4th Amendment. The 4th Amendment protects Americans against unreasonable searches and seizures. No soldier, government agent, or police officer can search your home or take your property without probable or a valid cause. If law enforcement officers believe you have committed a crime, they can ask a judge to issue a search warrant. This is a court order allowing law enforcement officers to search a suspect's home or business and take specific items as evidence. Judges do not have to give out search warrants easily. They must be convinced that a search warrant will probably turn up evidence of criminal activity. If warrants were issued frivolously, the 4th Amendment would give us little sense of security. Any time of the day or night, the police could invade our privacy and confiscate our possessions. The 5th Amendment. The 5th Amendment protects the rights of people accused of crimes. It states that no one can be put on trial for a serious federal crime without an indictment, a formal charge by a group of citizens called a grand jury, who review the evidence against the accused. A person who is indicted is not necessarily guilty of a crime. An indictment simply indicates the grand jury's belief that an individual may have committed a crime. The 5th Amendment also protects people from double jeopardy. This means that people who are accused of a crime and judged not guilty may not be put on trial again for the same crime. In addition, the 5th Amendment protects an accused person's right to remain silent. Throughout history, innocent people have been threatened, tortured, or bullied into confessing to crimes they did not commit. To prevent this, the 5th Amendment states that people cannot be forced to testify against themselves. This is called protection against self-incrimination. The 5th Amendment goes on to say that no one may be denied life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process means following established legal procedures. It also includes the idea that the laws themselves must be reasonable. The Fifth Amendment also protects a citizen's property rights. It limits the government's power of eminent domain. Eminent domain is the right of the government to take private property, usually land, for public use. For example, if your home lies in the path of a proposed highway, the government may legally take the land and destroy your house. The Fifth Amendment limits this power and requires the government to pay a fair price for the property. The Sixth Amendment. The Sixth Amendment guarantees additional rights to people accused of crimes. It requires that they be told the exact nature of the charges against them. It also requires that the accused be allowed a trial by jury, although they may ask to be tried by only a judge instead. If an accused person asks for a jury trial, the trial must be speedy and public, and jurors must be impartial. If possible, the trial should be held in the same area in which the crime took place. The accused individuals have the right to hear and question all witnesses against them. They must also be permitted to call witnesses in their own defense. Finally, they are entitled to have a lawyer. Since the Sixth Amendment was written, the Supreme Court has ruled that if an accused person cannot afford a lawyer, the government must provide one and pay his or her fees. The Eighth Amendment. Although the Sixth Amendment guarantees a speedy trial, sometimes months go by before a case can be heard. During that time, the accused may have two choices: stay in jail or remain free by paying bail. Bail is a sum of money used as a security deposit. If the person accused comes to court for the trial, the bail is returned. If the person fails to appear, though, the bail is forfeited. The judge decides how much bail a person must pay. The Eighth Amendment, however, forbids excessive bail, that is, an amount that is much too high. Excessive does not refer to what a person can afford to pay. In determining bail, a judge considers various factors, including the type of crime committed, the record of the accused person, and the likelihood that the accused will appear in court. In some cases, bail may be denied, as when a defendant is likely to flee. When a person is convicted of a crime, the Eighth Amendment protects him or her against having to pay excessive fines. Fines may vary, however, depending on the seriousness of the crime. The Eighth Amendment forbids cruel and unusual punishments. For many years, Americans have debated what kinds of punishment are cruel and unusual. It is generally agreed that punishment should be in proportion or balanced to the crime committed. For example, a sentence of life imprisonment for stealing a loaf of bread would be too harsh. People disagree strongly, however, about whether the death penalty for very serious crimes is cruel and unusual punishment. Reading check. Identifying. Which amendment protects a person accused of a crime from double jeopardy? Other protections. Main idea. In addition to the First Amendment freedoms and due process guarantees, the Bill of Rights includes other protections for American citizens. Civics and you. Several of the first 10 amendments deal with the rights of people accused of committing a crime. Why do you think the Constitution protects the rights of the accused? There is debate over what rights exactly are guaranteed by the Second Amendment. Some argue that it provides only for each state to maintain a well-regulated militia by allowing the members of those militias to carry arms. When the Second Amendment was written, a militia was a small local army made of volunteer soldiers. Other people hold that the Second Amendment guarantees the right of all individual citizens to keep and bear arms without the interference of the government. The courts have generally ruled that the government can pass laws to control, but not prevent, the possession of weapons. For example, federal and state laws determined who can be licensed to own firearms. The Third Amendment. One cause of the American Revolution was the colonists' resentment of the law requiring them to house and feed British soldiers. The Third Amendment makes it unlikely that Americans will ever be forced to shelter the military again. The amendment says that, in peacetime, soldiers may not move into private homes without the consent of the homeowner. The Seventh Amendment. The Fifth, Sixth, and Eighth Amendments deal with people's rights in criminal cases. The Seventh Amendment concerns civil cases, lawsuits that involve or contain disagreements between people rather than crimes. The Seventh Amendment provides for the right to a jury trial in federal courts to settle all disputes about property worth more than $20. When both parties in a conflict agree, however, a judge rather than a jury may hear evidence and settle the case. The Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment states that all other rights not spelled out in the Constitution are retained by the people. This amendment prevents the government from claiming that the only rights people have are those listed in the Bill of Rights. This Ninth Amendment makes it clear that citizens have other rights beyond those listed in the Constitution, and those rights may not be taken away. The Tenth Amendment. The first eight amendments grant the people rights. The Ninth Amendment states that the rights guaranteed in the Constitution are not the only rights the people have. Unlike the other amendments, the Tenth Amendment did not add anything to the ratified Constitution. The Tenth Amendment states that any powers the Constitution does not specifically give to the national government are reserved for the states and for the people. This amendment is the source of many of the reserved powers you learned about in Chapter 3. The amendment expresses the idea that the federal government is limited only to the powers it is granted in the Constitution. In this way, the Tenth Amendment prevents Congress and the President from becoming too strong. The government of the United States can have only the powers the people give it. Reading check. Describing, what is the purpose of the Tenth Amendment? Landmark Supreme Court case studies. Tinker versus Des Moines School District. Public school officials set standards of behavior that students are expected to follow. Does this arrangement leave students with any rights? Sometimes the Supreme Court must decide. Background of the case. One night in December 1965, a group of public school students, led by high school sophomores Christopher Eckhart and John Tinker, and eighth grader Mary Beth Tinker, wore black armbands to protest the Vietnam War. As other students joined the armband protest, principals and members of the school board met the growing protest with a ban on armbands to prevent disturbing influences. On December 16, 1965, Christopher, John, and Mary Beth were suspended for wearing their armbands to school. Their parents protested the suspension in federal courts. They contended the students' First Amendment free speech rights had been violated. The decision. On February 24, 1969, the United States Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, declared the school suspensions unconstitutional. Justice Abe Fortas, who wrote the majority opinion, first established that the students' action was akin to pure speech. Even though their protest involved no speaking, it deserved protection under the First Amendment. Then he wrote, it can hardly be argued that either students or teachers shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. Justice Abe Fortas. Why it matters. Supporters saluted the decision that students are entitled to freedom of expression of their views. Critics predicted harmful consequences. Dissenter Justice Hugo Black suggested that the court's decision was the beginning of a new revolutionary era of permissiveness in this country, fostered by the judiciary. He argued that no one has a complete right to freedom of speech and expression. Later decisions, such as Bethel School District versus Frazier, 1986, and Hazelwood School District versus Kohlmeier, 1988, narrowed students' First Amendment rights while expanding the authority of school officials. Section 3, Extending the Bill of Rights. Real-world civics. In the 1948 primary elections, thousands of African Americans across the country stood in line to exercise their right to vote for the first time since 1876. They faced possible violence, name-calling, even losing their jobs. Although the 15th Amendment guarantees the right to vote, some states created obstacles such as poll taxes, passing a literacy test, or proving property ownership to avoid letting minorities vote. In 1944, the Supreme Court ruled that these requirements, specifically designed to exclude African Americans, were illegal. Civil War Amendments. Main idea. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments are called the Civil War Amendments because they grew out of that war. Civics and you. In our country, freedom and the right to express our opinions are precious rights. Read to learn about efforts to extend these rights. The Bill of Rights was intended originally to constrain only the national government. For many years, local and state governments were not bound by its terms. As a result, states sometimes use their reserved powers to pass laws that violate or disobey civil liberties. In most parts of the country, for example, women and African Americans could not vote. Before 1865, many states had laws that sanctioned the enslavement of African Americans, who were treated as property and had almost no rights at all. Three amendments were passed after the Civil War to extend civil liberties to African Americans. However, the promise of these Civil War amendments was not fulfilled for almost 100 years. Many states were slow to change their customs. Some actively resisted. The federal government and the Supreme Court often seemed indifferent. The 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment officially outlawed slavery in the United States and thus freed thousands of African Americans. It also outlawed any sort of forced labor, except as punishment for a crime. The 14th Amendment. Although the 13th Amendment ensured the freedom of African Americans, it did not guarantee them full rights. After the Civil War, many Southern states passed black codes that excluded African Americans from certain jobs, limited their property rights, and restricted them in other ways. To remedy this situation, the 14th Amendment was enacted in 1868. It defined a United States citizen as anyone born or naturalized in the United States, a definition that included most African Americans. The amendment also required every state to grant its citizens equal protection of the laws. In recent years, this clause has been used to benefit women, people with disabilities, and other groups whose rights have not always been protected fairly. The 14th Amendment also forbids state governments from interfering with the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Further, State governments may not take an individual's life, liberty, or property without due process of law. These provisions made the Bill of Rights binding for state governments as well as the federal government. This is called the nationalization of the Bill of Rights. The Supreme Court, however, ignored this interpretation of the 14th Amendment until 1925. Then, in Gitlow versus New York, the court ruled that the 14th Amendment could safeguard free speech and a free press from impairment by the states. Since the Gitlow case, the Supreme Court has used the 14th Amendment to apply other rights in the Bill of Rights to the states. This incorporation of the Bill of Rights by the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause means that U.S. citizens in every part of the country have the same basic rights. The 15th Amendment, the last of the Civil War amendments, the 15th, says that no state may take away a person's voting rights on the basis of race, color, or previous enslavement. The amendment clearly aimed to guarantee suffrage, the right to vote, to African Americans. Still, many states found ways to keep African Americans away from the polls. The 15th Amendment, in reality, protected only men. The various states had the power to decide whether women could vote. Women, regardless of their race, could not vote in most federal or state elections. Reading check, explaining. What did the 13th Amendment outlaw in addition to slavery? Later amendments. Main idea. Amendments added to the Constitution in the 20th century deal with a wide range of topics. Civics and you. Our Constitution has endured for more than 200 years with only 27 amendments. Read to find out about the amendments added to the Constitution in the 20th century. Gradually, the Bill of Rights came to cover all Americans equally and to limit government power at all levels. Additional amendments to the Constitution and court rulings extended the rights of Americans to participate fully in the democratic process. A number of amendments deal with voting rights. The 17th Amendment. According to Article 1 of the Constitution, the people were to elect members of the House of Representatives, but the state legislatures were to choose members of the Senate. Ratified in 1913, the 17th Amendment allows voters to elect their senators directly. This change in the election process gave Americans a greater voice in their government. The 19th Amendment. Although the Constitution did not guarantee women the right to vote, it did not explicitly deny them suffrage. As a result, states made their own laws on the matter, using the powers reserved to them under the 10th Amendment. The territory of Wyoming permitted women to vote in 1869, and several other territories and states did so as well in the years that followed. Anthony and Stanton. However, national support for woman suffrage was slow in coming. Women's suffrage leaders Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton had insisted as early as 1848 that women belonged at the polls. Many who believed that women should not have the same rights as men opposed them, however. It was only in 1920 that the 19th Amendment protected the right of women to vote in all national and state elections. The 23rd Amendment. African Americans and women were not the only citizens who were denied voting rights for many years. Residents of our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., also fell into this group. As you may know, D.C. stands for the District of Columbia, an area between Maryland and Virginia. Because the district is not a state, the people who live there were not initially allowed to vote in national elections. The 23rd Amendment changed that in 1961. The amendment says that the residents of the District of Columbia may vote for the president and vice president, just as other Americans do. The 24th Amendment. Although the 15th Amendment gave African Americans the right to vote, many had trouble exercising this right. One reason was that several southern states had poll taxes. In other words, they required voters to pay a sum of money before casting a ballot. Because the tax had to be paid not only for the current year, but also for previous unpaid years as well, it was a financial burden for many. Because many African Americans could not afford the tax, they could not vote. Poor whites were in the same situation. In 1964, the 24th Amendment made poll taxes illegal in national elections. 2 years later, the Supreme Court ruled that poll taxes were illegal in state elections as well. The elimination of the poll tax allowed many African American citizens to enjoy their full rights as voters for the first time. The 26th Amendment. Throughout our nation's history, people still in their teens have bravely fought for our country. By law, however, they were not old enough to vote for the leaders who sent them into battle. Although the Constitution did not specify or mention a minimum age for voters, most states set the minimum at 21. That standard finally changed in 1971, a year when many young Americans were fighting in the Vietnam War. The 26th Amendment guaranteed the right to vote to citizens 18 and older for all national and state elections. As a result, millions more Americans can exercise their right to vote and enjoy the rights of full citizenship. Reading check, explaining. Who benefited most from the passing of the 23rd Amendment? Financial literacy. Cash or credit? Debbie is shopping and sees a jacket she really likes on sale for $300. However, she has a problem. No cash. Since she is 18, she has her own credit card. The card carries an 18% annual percentage rate on unpaid balances. Debbie calculates she can afford to pay $15 a month on the account. Should she buy the jacket or not? How credit cards work. Credit is using tomorrow's money to pay for something you get today. A credit card is a useful financial tool. It can be more convenient to use and carry than cash, and it offers valuable consumer protections under federal law. Credit card advantages. Buy needed items now. Do not have to carry cash. Creates a record of purchases. Consolidates bills into one payment. Credit card pitfalls. Higher cost of items, interest and finance charges. Financial problems may occur if you lose track of how much you are spending each month. Leads to impulse buying. Credit has both advantages and disadvantages. By using it wisely, you emphasize the advantages. Checklist for buying on credit. There are no hard and fast rules to tell you whether or not to buy on credit. Answer these questions to help you determine if you are making a wise decision. 1. Do I really require this item? Can I postpone purchasing the item until later? 2. If I pay cash, what will I be giving up that I could buy with this money? 3. Have I done comparison shopping for credit? 4. Can I afford to borrow or use credit now? Section 4. The Civil Rights Struggle. Real World Civics. In September 1957, after weeks of violence, Little Rock Central High School accepted 9 African American students, the only black students in the public high school. The teenagers and their families could not have imagined how their determination would affect the lives of millions of students who came after them. Now, more than 50 years later, their bravery is marked by Testament, a monument on the Arkansas State Capitol grounds. the former students, Elizabeth Eckford, right, Melba Patillo Beals, left, and the other students were reunited for the dedication. Struggle for rights. Main idea. Although amendments to the Constitution guaranteed rights to Americans, African Americans and other groups still did not enjoy civil rights. Civics and you. What would you do if you were denied equal rights when using public transportation or while sitting in a movie theater? Read to find out how the civil rights movement reacted. Despite the advances made after the Civil War, African Americans routinely faced discrimination or unfair treatment based on prejudice against a certain group. Southern states, for example, passed so-called Jim Crow laws requiring African Americans and whites to be separated in most public places, such as schools. Later, African Americans had to ride in the back of buses and sit in separate sections or parts of restaurants and theaters. They even had to use separate public restrooms. The social separation of the races was known as segregation. African Americans in the North fared better. They could vote freely, and segregation was less noticeable. Even so, prejudice restricted opportunities for many. It would take more than 100 years for African Americans to secure their civil rights, the rights of full citizenship and equality under the law. The Brown Decision. An important gain came in 1948 when President Harry S. Truman ordered an end to segregation in the nation's armed forces. A bigger victory was the Supreme Court's decision in Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, 1954. In this landmark case, the Supreme Court ruled that racial segregation in the public schools was unconstitutional. Segregation violated the 14th Amendment's principle of equal protection under the law. Montgomery Bus Boycott. In 1955, 1 year after the Brown decision, an African-American woman named Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to give up her seat to a white man on a Montgomery, Alabama bus. Parks was arrested for violating Alabama's segregation laws. Her refusal and arrest spurred the local African-American community to organize a boycott of the Montgomery bus system. A year later, the Supreme Court ruled that public bus segregation was unconstitutional. Both Parks and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a leader of the boycott, gained national prominence. Peaceful protests. A Baptist minister and stirring speaker, King believed in nonviolent resistance, the peaceful protest of unfair laws. He helped organize marches, boycotts, and demonstrations that opened many people's eyes to the need for change. African American students began staging sit-ins at lunch counters that served only whites. White and African American freedom riders traveled together on buses to protest segregation. In his 1963 I Have a Dream speech, King inspired thousands with his hopes for racial equality. Civil Rights Act of 1964. In response to the growing demand for government action, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This far-reaching law prohibited discrimination in public facilities, employment, education, and voter registration. It also banned discrimination not only by race and color, but also by sex or gender, religion, and national origin. Reading check. Describing. Through what means did Martin Luther King Jr. hope to change unfair laws? The struggle continues. Main idea. The struggle for equality in America has persisted and has extended to include many groups. Civics and you. Regardless of your race, religion, or political beliefs, you have the right to be treated equally under the law. Read more about the efforts to fight discrimination. Although the 15th Amendment to the Constitution gave African American males the right to vote, that right was not always respected. By the 1960s, several states had found ways, such as the poll tax, to discourage African Americans from registering and voting. Ratified in 1964, the 24th Amendment outlawed poll taxes. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 took further steps to ensure that all citizens would have the opportunity to vote, regardless of race. As President Lyndon Johnson said when he signed the act, "Millions of Americans are denied the right to vote because of their color. This law will ensure them the right to vote. The wrong is one which no American, in his heart, can justify." President Lyndon B. Johnson. Civil rights gains. In 2006, the United States Senate renewed the Voting Rights Act of 1965, hailing it as one of the most effective pieces of civil rights legislation in history. The civil rights laws of the 1960s were instrumental in opening more doors for minorities. African Americans, Latinos, and other minorities have made striking gains in educational achievement. They increasingly hold professional and managerial jobs and serve in government, yet whites still tend to have more opportunities. Affirmative action. In the 1970s, the federal government began affirmative action programs to try to make up for past discrimination. These programs encouraged the hiring and promoting of minorities and women in fields that were traditionally closed to them. Colleges, too, practiced affirmative action to help minority students gain admission. From the start, affirmative action was controversial. Critics complained that giving preferential treatment to women and minorities amounted to discrimination against men and whites. The Supreme Court case of Gratz v. Bollinger, 2003, centered on affirmative action. The court struck down a University of Michigan point-based admission policy, stating that it gave excessive points to minority applicants. The struggle for equal rights continues. Each year, the federal government receives more than 75,000 complaints of workplace discrimination. Many Americans and others are sometimes subject to racial profiling by law enforcement officers, being singled out as suspects because of the way they look. Some Americans even become the victims of hate crimes, acts of violence based on a person's race, color, national origin, gender, or disability. Reading check. Explaining. What is the purpose of affirmative action programs? Landmark Supreme Court case studies. Dred Scott v. Sanford. Before the Civil War, Americans were asking, are African Americans citizens of the United States? May Congress prohibit enslavement of African Americans in U.S. territories? Background of the case. Dred Scott, an enslaved African American, worked for a physician. A member of the military, the physician moved often, taking Scott with him. As a result, Scott lived for a time in the state of Illinois and in the territory of Wisconsin, both slave-free zones. Both zones were also north of the boundary set by Congress in the Missouri Compromise of 1820. The Missouri Compromise permitted slavery south of the line and prohibited slavery north of it. By 1846, the physician died, and Scott was again living in Missouri. There he continued to work for the physician's widow and her brother, John Sanford, who was from New York. Scott sued for his freedom. He claimed that his earlier residence in a free state and a free territory made him free. Missouri's courts denied Scott, however. In order to claim federal court jurisdiction, Scott's lawyers then stated that Scott was a citizen of Missouri bringing suit against Sanford, a citizen of New York. The decision. The Supreme Court decided the case on March 6th to 7th, 1857. Chief Justice Roger B. Taney spoke for the 7-justice majority. Taney first asserted his own view of the framers' so-called original intent. The only rights and privileges African Americans were meant to have were those granted by their so-called owners or by the government. Therefore, Dred Scott could not be a citizen. He wrote further, "It is the opinion of the court that the act of Congress, which prohibited slaveholding north of the line therein mentioned, is void, and that neither Dred Scott himself nor any member of his family were made free by being carried into this territory." Chief Justice Roger B. Taney. The court was saying that the suit of non-citizen Scott and the Missouri Compromise were unconstitutional. Therefore, Scott was not free. Why it matters. The ruling added to the tensions that led to the Civil War. In 1868, 3 years after the end of the war, the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution overruled the Dred Scott decision.